Let's Talk Letts, an original podcast from the Lettings Hub.
Hello and welcome to our new podcast, Let's Talk Letts. I'm Heidi, the CEO of the Lettings Hub, the tenant referencing business that got good at tech. Let's Talk Letts is our new regular roundup of news and views on a whole range of subjects spanning the private rental sector. We've got many guests and many subjects lined up over the coming weeks, but in this episode, I'm joined by Carly German, the CEO of our legal provider, Woodstock Legal Services. Welcome, Carly.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Woodstock is a specialist provider of legal services to the housing sector, specialising in evictions and debt recovery, and they're very much the team that we rely on to ensure that letting agents have all the practical help they need and support to gain vacant possession in the event that a tenant defaults on their rent or abuses the tenancy in any way. It's very exciting to have you as our very first guest on our very first podcast. So let's get started. The market we're operating in at the moment is obviously proving to be pretty problematic for some tenants. Obviously, rents are rising fast. It's harder for them to secure a home and there's obviously a lot less choice. But sometimes tenancies go wrong. And actually, more frequently, it's a tenant's set of circumstances that change, which means they fall on hard times. That could be a job loss, mental health, the breakdown of their relationship. And actually, there's a lot more pressure now based on the disposable income gap as rents are rising and income not at the rate it was. But yet all of the other costs like energy bills and food bills obviously kind of take over, that when a situation happens, it can put immense pressure directly on that tenant. So when those tenants stop paying the rent and then the landlord very much deserves their property back, there is a whole set of complex rules and regulations to go through to make sure that we handle it in the best way. And that's very much why we engage with the experts and where Carly and her team support us to make sure that the process is legal, fair, and obviously as effective as possible. For this podcast, we asked our letting agent customers all that they wanted to know. And unfortunately, we don't have a whole day to answer everything. So we've picked the pertinent ones that actually came up more than once. But just before we go into those, there's a few quick questions that I wanted to ask myself. So I can imagine, Carly, you and your team at the moment have never been busier. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it is incredibly busy. And I think the nail on the head, where it is complex. There's a huge amounts of regulation surrounding the private rental sector and dealing with problematic tenancies. I've been doing this job for a very, very long time, and over the years it's just got more and more complex, which is interesting for us as lawyers but can be very challenging, I think, for landlords. And no doubt with reforms looming, it'll become more complex and more challenging, but that's what we're here to deal with. And yeah, we're incredibly busy dealing with a wide range of issues which have sort of changed slightly over the years.
If we kind of think about life right now, we'll come back to that in a second, but I've got to ask about the Renters Reform Bill.
Yeah.
And kind of looking ahead. I'm a little bit bored of it myself already, but what is the current position on the Renters Reform Bill and what do you think is going to happen next?
Yeah, I'm with you. And it's, sometimes when you know something's going to happen, you just want it to happen, don't you? So you can deal with it. And I think the uncertainty has been a real issue for everybody. We're waiting for the second reading. This bill's got, a journey to go through Parliament until we have law. And there's huge debate going on. Even if you look at the press, the media, the last couple of days, there's been some really important points made. And I feel like they're starting to recognise, and I'm sure they did anyway, but the real value of the private rental sector in what is a mixed housing market. So the one thing I will say is whatever happens with the reforms, what we do know is that we are continuing on a journey where this industry, the private rental sector, is becoming more professional. Everybody's a professional landlord. It's become more highly regulated and has done for many, many years. And, we're in a professional business. When you're a landlord, you're running a professional business. And it's really important that landlords understand that. So whether we have reforms or not, it's incredibly important that landlords understand their obligations, they engage the right people to support them, and that they really see it as a business and an asset that they have to protect.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's why it becomes so important, that making sure they've got the right advice and they know exactly what to do when is pretty critical. So
yes,
I suppose without getting too political, do you think a change in government is going to be better or worse? And in terms of what effect that could have on the Renters Reform Bill in terms of the view that Labour may take?
I suspect they're going to take an even more tenant favourable view, in my view, having looked at what they've put out there to date. So, I'd personally like to see the Conservatives deal with it rapidly. So then, you know, if we did have a Labour government, perhaps they'd consider it's been dealt with and cast their attention elsewhere. So who knows?
Okay. So like I said before, I'm a little bit fatigued about the renters reform bill, to be honest, because although we know looking ahead is so important and planning, it's really hard to plan when the goalposts will move and we actually are unsure how far. So let's talk about the here and now and what are the current challenges that we face in the rental sector. So the first question we have is all about evictions, really, and the court system. So we obviously hear of big backlogs, tenants obviously getting more savvy, I suppose, at defending their position, whether that's justified or not, just to buy a bit more time, and obviously difficulty in securing a court date anytime soon. Tell us what's going on. What's going on in the courts? What's the situation, especially around evictions? And is the situation getting better or worse? And what do agents and landlords really need to know?
Yeah, I think we do evictions nationally. So we do them in England and Wales. And so we dip in and out of all of the courts. And we see there's a huge difference between the speed that different courts deal with things. So, you know, there's several courts in London that are incredibly slow. There'll be some that if that name pops up and you're allocated that court, it's, we know we're in for a long journey. And then you've got others where our head office is down here in Bournemouth, then actually, you know, Poole, it's actually not too bad. So it very much depends where you are. But without a doubt, the court systems need a massive overhaul. They are archaic is the only way to describe them. Mm. And their systems and processes are far behind, you know, what happens in, you know, private sector. And that's the challenge you're dealing with. And, you know, I mean, we're talking about reforms and, you know, actually, I don't think lawyers would be too disappointed to see the back of Section 21s to a degree, which sounds a bit of a crazy thing for me to say. But they, for me, they've just got incredibly complicated, and that's helped clog up the court system. The amount of tick boxing that has to go on, the amount of paperwork you have to serve, and you're expecting a judge who's in court all day then has to wade through that paperwork. So if your paperwork's not perfectly in order or it's challenged by a tenant, then that's when you get delays there, obviously. And I know we're trying not to talk about the reforms, but if Section 21 does go, then everybody will need a court hearing to decide whether possession should be granted. And that's my biggest concern with the reforms, because the courts aren't able to swiftly deal with the cases they've got in front of them now and provide, you know, quick hearings for people so that the process can move nice and swiftly. So that's the challenge. And then we've also seen, you know, once you've got your possession order, we've seen difficulties with gaining physical possession. So you get your possession order and that tells you when the tenant needs to leave. But of course, you can't simply change the locks and you need them to be almost physically removed in a legal sense. And that's when you would engage a county court bailiff or a high court enforcement officer. And you probably have seen in the press a while ago, we had an issue with PPE. So bailiffs down tools because they didn't have the right protection equipment, which was incredibly frustrating. You can imagine people that have waited for a very long time to get their piece of paper that says, you know, they're leaving on this date to be told. And we had them calling up on the day, or, you know, agents saying the bailiff's not turned up. And then you call the court and they're saying, oh, they've down tools, they've not got PPE. Incredibly frustrating. And then, you know, more recently we've had court strikes as well. So again, slowing down the process. So you're dealing with, that's the system you're dealing with. There's not much we can do about it until they heavily invest, and serious investment is needed.
Do we have any alternative options in that scenario? Because obviously we've dealt with some cases ourselves, haven't we, Carly, where, you know, we've got possession granted back in July, but no bailiff going in until November. It seems crazy to me.
Yeah. So what I would always recommend is you check what the bailiff wait times are around you, and then you look at other options. So you do have the option of high court enforcement, which we do use very regularly. Okay. The difficulty you've got is that you need permission from the courts to do that, and some courts are more reluctant than others, and we know which courts those are. We know there's some judges that, you know, are very, very unlikely to give you permission, and that's incredibly frustrating. And, you know, my view is that they should be doing more and allowing us permission. But actually the high court enforcement officers, again, a shortage, and that slowed down, I would say, unfortunately. And in some areas, it's not much quicker than the county court bailiff. So it's knowing, talking to whoever's assisting you and finding out how long is the county court bailiff going to take, speaking to the high court enforcement officers, how can you do that, and doing your level best to get permission so you've got that option. I absolutely always tell a landlord to protect your position at the earliest opportunity. So you serve your notice at the first available date. You issue proceedings on the first available date. You've got to gain that system as much as you can. But always look at your other options. And we do this so regularly that we will speak to a tenant and we will agree a surrender on terms that work for the landlord and work for the tenant, and encourage landlords to look at it. And this is why I talk about a business and protecting your asset. You just need to get that property relet, and there are plenty of tenants out there. So actually, quite often, and more often than landlords realise, you can do a deal with the tenants to give them the ability to move on from this situation and move into a new one. We talked about, you know, changing circumstances. And sometimes, actually, all people need is the opportunity to, you know, pull their head out of the sand, perhaps returning a deposit in full so they can go and put the deposit down elsewhere. I would always say, like I say, protect your position from a legal standpoint, but also look at it from a commercial perspective and try and communicate and do a deal with your tenant alongside those court proceedings. And we see that we had huge success with that in the pandemic, and we continue to do it today.
Yeah, mediation has definitely become a key step in that process, hasn't it, really? And, you know, talking to tenants and all their guarantors or anyone involved in that process really has been a big help. I mean, the government, even on their website right now, I think, is still stating that some courts are 14 months behind. Have you actually experienced anything quite so long as that? Or
14 months is a long figure. I'm sure we'll have had the odd one that has been like that, you know. And it's just, it's not necessarily just backlog, it's their organisation. If anyone who works in courts is going to, you know, be customary listen to this, but, you know, quite often it's files are lost, they're transferred from courts, there's just their systems and processes are not up to the job.
So just help us understand a little bit, because obviously not everybody's been to court and understands exactly the court system. So do, you know, these type of tenancy cases get heard on a particular day? Are they kind of in amongst all the other type of cases they could be dealing with? Is a judge kind of bouncing from one thing to the next?
Yeah, they'll normally have a judge that'll sit and do housing cases for that day. But that doesn't necessarily mean they're a housing specialist, which can be quite frustrating. And that was one of the suggestions a while ago, that we would have this housing court. But you don't. You have a judge that, you know, one day they might be sitting listening to family or childcare cases, and the next it's housing, which can be frustrating because it is very niche, it's very specialist, and it's really important they know the law. And it's a 15-minute hearing. I think a lot of people don't realise that. So
very quick.
So that's why it's incredibly important that you've got a great advocate there for you, that you've had people prepare your case so that every little, you know, loophole or something that a tenant could throw at you on the day is dealt with, and you're ready there to deal with it. Because the issue you've got is that a tenant may throw in a defence. They've got timelines, they've got a deadline to put in a defence. But at the end of the day, if they put that defence at court on the day, a judge will listen to it. And they're likely to say, I haven't got time for this, I'll adjourn it. And that's the last thing you want. You want to deal with it on the day. So we will always, you know, and that's another opportunity to negotiate with them and say, look, let's not adjourn this. We're just kicking the can down the road. And actually, you're going to owe even more money at the end of this if we wait another 3 months for a hearing. So let's deal with it now. So I think that's really important.
I suppose it's difficult, isn't it? Because the consequences of a tenant, you know, being evicted and losing a home is, you know, it's fairly horrific if you think about it, especially when, you know, you think obviously there's often children involved or their circumstances are just really, really sad. But obviously the court system doesn't really help in the fact that it doesn't, you know, add a CCJ unless the landlord goes and pays extra to that process. There's nothing stopping that tenant going back round again.
You know, actually, I think even the reforms may change this slightly, and obviously because a lot of people where there's antisocial behaviour are removed via Section 21, because it's very difficult. If you go to court and you have a court hearing and you've got to provide evidence of antisocial behaviour, that's incredibly difficult to do, because the people that you would want to be there to give witness statement evidence are incredibly reluctant. You can imagine you're living in a block of flats, as an example, and you've got an antisocial neighbour. You know, how bold and brave are you going to be going to court to say, my neighbour's a neighbour from hell, they do X, Y, Z? Because if they don't leave and they're not removed, you've got to live next to them. So that's why, you know, that's one of the biggest concerns about the reforms. Keep dipping in back to reforms, don't I? I can't shake them off. But that's why people use Section 21. And when it comes to rent arrears, people were using Section 21 because, A, they perceived it to be quicker. I question whether it is, but... And that meant that tenants that did owe money never had a county court judgment against them. But if you remove Section 21, there will be a lot more county court judgments against tenants, which, you know, can be registered. So in theory, that could deal with the problem in part. It's not great for landlords, but it, you know, it should, you know, from referencing point of view, for example, it may be more useful.
It would be flagged at least, wouldn't it, in terms of, you know, that someone becomes aware of, you know, a tenant's history.
Yeah.
Because obviously I think property fraud now is the fifth biggest type of fraud in the UK and obviously rising. Linking actually onto what you were just saying, the next question that we have is, what is the most common mistake that you see from obviously agents or landlords when looking at you know, filing a Section 21 or trying to get possession of a property? So the example the customers listed here are things like, you know, is it not uploading gas safety certificates, not registering the deposit correctly, you know, the landlord basically taking things into their own hands and changing the locks. What are the common kind of problems, or what kind of top tips can you give us on, you know, what to not do in this scenario?
Do you know what? It's quite a variety, actually, and it still is crazy that you see people that are very slightly, you know, it's very, very rare that we see someone who's completely failed to protect a deposit these days. But what you do see is people be technically look a bit late, do things like where somebody pays part of the deposit and then the rest of it, you know, a month later, you have to protect it when you receive, even if you received a pound, that needs to be protected. Or we see slight inaccuracies with the prescribed information. I think more often than not, aside from deposit issues, people have or believe they have served all of the correct documents prior to the commencement of the tenancy. So your gas safety, your EPC, your how to rent guide. Of course, we've had just had a new one, and your prescribed information. But they don't have the evidence, the unequivocal evidence that they've actually done that and they served the correct document at the correct time, the correct version. I've been to court. I'll give you an example. I went to court. This is years ago, but I went to court. They had evidence. They'd served all of their documents. Copy email, the EPC attached, because exactly when it had been served prior to the tenancy. And I think they'd served it by post as well, from recollection. And we got to court and the tenant said, they didn't serve me an EPC. And I said, well, yes, they did. Here's the evidence to the judge. And he said, no, the EPC that was served on me was for a completely different property. And actually, when you'd looked at the evidence and any evidence we've been presented, it was labelled up as EPC for this address, but it was just human error. And, you know, they'd uploaded the wrong EPC, named it incorrectly and served a random EPC. That tenant, you know, our word against theirs, that may not have even been correct. But on that day of that hearing, we were unable to prove that that was the actual document attached. So systems and processes are incredibly important.
I think from our point of view within Box, actually the audit trail feature is one of the, you know, most talked about, actually one that really agents really do value for that reason, because it dates timestamps and dates everything that's happened and when, where everything's gone and who's seen what when. It becomes very useful and really hard to question, I suppose. So I suppose it's an agent making sure that they have, if they're not using a system, like a tech solution, that they have their own really refined internal process.
Yeah, look at your portfolio. Don't think, oh, don't bury your head in the sand and think, did I used to do that correctly 3 years ago? Has my process changed? Go back and look at them. And if you need help tidying up, the team can help you with that as well. And we do that now and again. We get instructed to serve a Section 21 notice and we always review the paperwork, which takes a lot of time now. And if there are problems, we can normally resolve those quite quickly so that you can then go on and serve a valid notice.
I suppose it sounds really simple, but in reality, it's quite hard to make sure you do. So you mentioned the How to Rent Guide. Obviously, we've had a new version out again this week. As always, there is obviously it gets released without notice often. And we all have to implement it pretty much straight away, which obviously we have done. But what's changed? What's changed in this one and what does it really mean?
Do you know what? It isn't a huge amount. And I think quite often when we have these new additions, there's not huge changes in there. There's nothing, you know, no light bulb stuff in there. The key thing for me in this one is tenants' access to support, which, you know, lots of landlords might think, oh, they're getting, you know, getting more help. This is even harder for me. I don't actually see it like that. And I've talked a lot about trying to negotiate with tenants and come to an agreement. And I think actually this might help. And particularly where the courts are so backlogged, if tenants do have places they can go to support, that gives us an organisation that we can have a sensible conversation with, removing the emotion. So, you know, your lawyers can talk to the organisation that are providing the support and try and reach a deal that works for everybody. I actually think by tenants having that support, they've got somebody they can go and ask sensible questions, who should be saying to them, how can I either keep you in this property, or do you need to move on and you need to find the cleanest and tidiest way to move on whilst protecting yourself?
Just thinking about that, just, you know, my mind's gone to a certain place in the fact that, do you think it's really important then that letting agents, if they're the ones managing a property or obviously a landlord, that they actually try and make themselves very open to hear from a tenant? If a tenant gets into a situation that they very much want to hear about it, we know that they act on behalf of a landlord and they're paid by a landlord, and now they're not paid by tenants anymore. But having that dialogue open where a tenant can, you know, very much go straight into an agent and talk to them about what's going on, how vital is that now then compared to before?
It's really important. And we saw it in the pandemic. We did a whole scheme called, it was an early intervention scheme. And we did it alongside an insurer that we do lots of work for, because you had an issue where people suddenly couldn't pay the rent and their circumstances had changed. And actually, by opening up lines of communication, there's huge amounts you can do. Do people just need a little rent repayment holiday? Do they need, is the ability to, if they've got into arrears, to overpay? Sometimes you've got a great tenant that's, you know, hit on hard times. If that tenant's willing to be open and honest with you, they're, you know, sometimes they're a tenant worth keeping. So court may not be your best option.
I guess it's good to talk, as they say.
It is.
I mean, from our point of view, we still have very successful mediation when we are dealing with an insurance claim, you know, and actually being able to intercept and talk to tenants at that time. Often we have a 2 in 10 chance, a 20% chance very, very early on to remedy the situation. So no claim has to be proceed, I suppose.
Yeah.
And then there's still mediation that can happen during the process and a little bit down the line, as you mentioned earlier. So really important.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the earlier the better. I think sometimes if you've got to the point where, don't worry, we've done it at hearings plenty of times. We've even done it between a hearing and a bailiff appointment. But the sooner you do it, the better.
Well, we've definitely experienced situations ourselves where landlords, we obviously offer a whole range of protection services, but if a landlord hasn't had that protection, we've definitely come across scenarios now where landlords are actually paying the tenant to go, paying them their first month's rent for their next property, because that's a much cheaper option than sitting in a court system that could potentially, where they could be there for 10 months.
Yeah, exactly.
It's crazy, really. Okay, so our very final question then of the day, because we're going to run out of time, is what advice would you give to talking to landlords who are planning to sell their properties because of all the changes? And I suppose if we look at this, a landlord uses a letting agent as a professional service. They use them to because they don't have all the answers. Very similarly to how they might use an accountant for financial or tax advice and support. So in this instance, I suppose it's really important that the letting agent either has the knowledge themselves, and obviously we appreciate letting agents are not lawyers, or they obviously have access to or are partnered with somebody that can obviously very much help, which is where obviously I suppose many of us kind of fall into that category. What advice would you give to agents? What can they say to a landlord to maybe try and deflect them away from selling, maybe, Carly?
I appreciate it is stressful for landlords, and I've been a landlord myself, so I do understand, you know, the stresses, and I can see why looming reforms people might think, do you know what, I'm out. But I think, like you say, the first important thing is, if you've self-managed a property, actually looking to have an agent do it for you. And we've talked about systems and processes, looking at their systems and processes and making sure they tick all of the boxes. That can take a huge headache away, as can dealing with an agent that's got, you know, fantastic knowledge on how to really well manage a property. And we talked about being able to open up the lines of communication with tenants, etc., deal with problems early, deal with repair issues, kind of take that headache away. We work with loads of agents across England and Wales, and we do lots of training with them. So there are some fantastic agents out there that have got great legal knowledge, but also know when to pass the baton on to, you know, people like ourselves that can help if things start to get a bit trickier. And the other thing I see is where landlords don't have insurance, as an example, I think that can provide a huge amount of comfort. So, you know, it is changing. It's become a much more professionalist sector. But, you know, having a great managing agent, having insurance is, you know, is key.
Absolutely. Right. Well, thank you so much, Carly. It's been a really interesting conversation.
You're welcome.
I know we could actually talk for hours.
I know we could.
And it's very clear, obviously, from the questions submitted, and there's obviously lots of scenarios that obviously the industry is facing, both, you know, some of them have been around for a very long time, and obviously there's going to be some new things that are introduced. I always, you know, I'm a big fan of insurance. It's like the contraception, I suppose, of the rental sector, to, you know, try and protect yourselves before something actually does go wrong. But it is becoming, I think, more important than ever to potentially have it. As an ending to each of our podcasts, we've decided that we're going to ask each of our guests something a bit more lighthearted, something funny, unique, quirky about what goes on in their world, in our industry. So, Carly, do you have any little anecdotes for us?
Oh, I like this one. Yes, I do. I mean, you're dealing with people, aren't you? So there's always something. And we deal with everything from cannabis farms, prostitution. It all goes on. I think the funniest or most interesting thing we've had recently is a tenant trying to sue a landlord for the loss of their cats who escaped on the day of the bailiffs coming. Wow. They decided not to put them somewhere safe and be rehoused. So we've had to deal with that claim. So for anyone who's wondering whether you can sue your landlord if you lose your cats on eviction day, the answer is no, you can't.
Good to know, I think, for all of our listeners. Thank you, Carly. To ensure that you never miss an episode of Let's Talk Let's, please follow us on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcast. And obviously, if you like it, then please leave us a review. Thank you very much for listening.